Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here and making a drive out. Nice to have the almost snow and rain that we've been having. Nice to have the creek running, which in my experience here, I've never seen it run to this kind of level, this much water. So now we have a babbling brook outside. We're a real Zen center. And then waking up this morning, my son Dylan woke me up, said it was snowing outside. And that was a surprise. Usually living here, very in contact with what the weather forecast is. But just returning after having a week away, a week down in the city where, you know, check the weather so maniacally, it was a surprise to wake up to snow. Okay. This morning I wanted to bring up a koan from the tradition as a talking point. And this is case 41 of the Mumonkan, or Gateless Gate. Bodhidharma puts the mind to rest. The case: Bodhidharma sat facing the wall. The second patriarch, or ancestor, standing in the snow, cut off his arm and said, "Your disciple's mind is not yet at peace. I beg you, Master, give it rest." Bodhidharma said, "Bring your mind to me and I will put it to rest." The patriarch replied, "I have searched for the mind, but have never been able to find it." Bodhidharma said, "I have finished putting it to rest for you." In commentary: the broken-toothed old barbarian came thousands of miles across the sea with an active spirit. It can rightly be said that he raised waves where there was no wind. In later life, he obtained one successor, but even he was crippled in his six senses. The fools do not even know four characters. End of verse. Coming from the west and pointing directly, all the trouble comes from the transmission. The one who disturbs the monasteries is originally you. The one who disturbs the monastery is originally you. Anyone who's lived at a Zen center for a period of time will resonate with that statement, I think.
We thought it was Al.
Yeah. The one who disturbs the monastery is originally you. But, you know, that monastery or temple, place of practice, most obviously is existent at a place that is called a temple or a monastery, or founded as such and practiced as such. So we could say this is a training center or temple. We don't really say monastery. But when coming in or going somewhere else, that is also the temple. That is also the center. We say Zen center. And at the center of Zen, here, that there is nowhere where one is not the center of Zen. The one that disturbs that, the one that complicates or obscures that, Mumon says, is originally you. I'm starting at the end with a verse, but, you know, to go to the beginning. Bodhidharma, so the great ancestor, of Zen, the person who is credited in the tradition with bringing the transmission of the lineage of Shakyamuni Buddha from India to China, somewhere around 5th century, I think. At a great age, leaving India, probably Sri Lanka, I think now, historically, and then coming to China. There had been other Buddhist teachers before him. He wasn't the first. Buddhism already had some development and following in China, with monks coming across. And that time when the Taoist and Confucian thought at the time began to encounter Buddhism and develop a school that would eventually be called the Chan School in China, or Zen in Japanese. So that is where we are now, in that lineage, in that place. Without, it's an amazing thing, without Bodhidharma's voyage across the Indian Ocean, we don't sit here. In one sense, it's pretty amazing. So he comes to the land, much as Maizumi Roshi travelled from Japan to America, bringing what? Again, looking at the verse of in the verse, all the trouble comes from the transmission. Bodhidharma transmitted the so-called Dharma, transmitted something from west to east. The case begins with his sat facing the wall. It's said after his meeting with Emperor Wu, the emperor of that kingdom, that part of China at that point. But after that meeting, he left, went to a suitable place for practice of meditation, withdrawn in the mountains, away from society, away from influence and politics. Enter the quiet place. And much as we do here, the sense of leaving the city, complications, the noise, the distraction, the content that becomes burdensome, and coming to a place that is quiet, that is perhaps in nature, but is conducive towards stopping. Sitting down, unobscuring this original self. Bodhidharma, long after transmission, after many decades of practice, still returns to the practice of Zazen. Master Dogen, in another writing, brings this up. You know, after transmission, 9 years wall-gazing. The Buddha, after his great enlightenment, 40 years of practice, he returns to that essential thing, facing the wall. Zazen, present awareness, original self. The practice here, is entering, becoming the Buddha Hall, the service, and then practice Zazen. Each of us, whether facing the wall or not, faces the wall. You know, to do things literally, to face the wall, or to found a monastery or a temple, literally, can be skillful to make it more apparent. And yet, when we sit each time, we face the wall. The wall of knowing. The wall of not knowing. Keizan Jokin, in talking on Zazen, said, when you take the posture of upright sitting, let the gaze fall down the bridge of the nose, and look at the original self. Just that. We sit and actively experience and study this self nature, the practice of Zazen. Bodhidharma practiced, said, alone in a cave, or what is now the area where Shaolin Temple is. It's credited with a lot of mystical things and a lot of historical things. He founded Kung Fu and discovered tea and all these many things. Became somewhat of a mythical or a legendary figure. And practicing there alone. To what end? You know, not a manifestation that is interested in status, that needs power, or things, but practicing, as again Master Dogen would say, self-fulfilling samadhi, the sitting, a zazen, that doesn't seek, that doesn't need to reach or to be other than thus. Now, this is often the mistake that we make as the human package that we are. We disturb the monastery when we look for something else, always looking for something to come. It is a fact of being human. It's not bad, it's not good. It is the way the human being functions. But when we sit, you cease looking for something else. Rather, sitting upright, the active inquiry of presence in every way that it shows up. With all the senses, sitting. And we listen, we hear sound, notice movement, thought. Maybe it's quiet, maybe it's busy. But how about when we sit Zazen, that we cease finding value in one thing over another, but rather with a radical allowing, a radical acceptance, an open inquiry, we directly experience this original self as it is and cease stirring the pot. Cease reaching, cease weighing and judging. Then that is the practice of Zazen. To just sit. To just sit. To rely on nothing. When we do that, when you rely on nothing, everything supports. There is nothing but support. Everything is here. We are held in that sense. Then to face a wall, it is enough. The wall is enough. It's more than enough. But this really goes straight to it, to sit and face the wall, to look for nothing else, to always be at the gate of the mystery, to be the mystery. But, you know, for most of us, it takes some time. It takes some inquiry. It takes some practice. It takes some difficulty. It takes some navigation. It takes some years. Master Eckhart, a practitioner, at that point, hears of, in some way, hears of the Indian monk living up in the mountains. He never comes down. And sets off to see if he can learn something. Not satisfied. He comes to Bodhidharma and asks, standing out in the snow, standing out in the cold, your disciple's mind is not yet at peace. And there's some dialogue before this, and if you read the whole anecdote of the story of this, Bodhidharma refusing to take him as a student. You know, so he says, your disciple, he's committed, he's decided. This is someone who has something, ooh, danger, you know, but there's something there which I don't quite understand or hasn't been realized. Perhaps they can help me illuminate it. Again, all the difficulty, as it says in the verse, comes from the transmission. What is it you expect to find from someone else or find from the teaching? Does it come from somewhere or go to somewhere? Can you hold it? What is it? And so we fumble around and we seek a teacher or a teaching. But it's not the property of someone. Your disciple's mind is not yet at rest. He's not yet at peace, but he's made some effort. He's made some effort. There's been the inquiry. And this frustration there is a positive thing. It's a good thing. It's a good thing to get frustrated in Zen practice. Or, you know, it doesn't have to be a bad thing. To become frustrated. To raise the heat of inquiry enough so that a transformation or a shift can occur. You know, we walk the perimeter always being comfortable. If you're always comfortable, you know, with a couple of toes in the water, then often there's not enough catalyst there for real shift. Most, you know, ironically, great positive shift often comes from great personal suffering, tumult. I have practiced, he says, but I'm not yet at peace. I beg you, please put my mind to rest. Other students of this era would say, please give me a turning word. Yeah. Please give me the magic bullet. Say or do something that helps me break this logjam. And Bodhidharma says, bring your mind to me and I'll put it to rest for you. Bring it. Find it. Show it. What is it, what you call mind? What is this self? If you can bring that, I will put it to rest for you. Like any good teacher turns it back on. The questioner doesn't offer some, you know, nice haiku or something about the, or sell something, give him something to go away with, but rather turns it right back and says, this mind that you cannot put to rest, bring it to me. What is that? Is it not so that often in our practice there's a feeling of it not being quite right? but my life is not quite right. Something is still off. And we spend our time or some time trying to improve that, trying to get beyond the hindrances, the karma or the conditioning, to a place where that will be resolved. Again, the natural activity of being human, to move away from difficulty, to move towards an end of suffering. The way that we function. And it is a curious thing, again, as being human, that we tend to concentrate, we'll hone in on the few things that aren't working right. When the great majority of things are working wonderfully from dawn to dusk and in between. And yet those few things that aren't quite right in our life, we hone in and chew on. You know, and pretty soon as we sink into those things, we become I speak from personal experience, then we become obsessed with them. And then it begins our issues, the problems, the conditioning, whatever is going on, the content that disturbs us, starts to smear through everything else. And we obscure the self, original self. And we smear over who I think I am over the top. And miss the perfection of things as they are, as this self, as it is. You know, we're very good at finding fault in ourself, in other people. To find it out there or to find it in here is just another way of separating, another way of creating other. Whether you call it this one or that one. That is the human condition. How essential it is to reveal and illuminate and really realize and penetrate the intrinsic fact of the matter. This original self, this intrinsic fact. This. In Zazen, that is what we do. You really sink your roots into that, into this self, into this not knowing, into this mystery. Switching away, shifting from that relentless urge to always want to reach in with discursive thought and work out and plan and scheme and weigh. That will always be there. But in our practice, it is essential to reveal that place, the self that doesn't move. In this whole experience of coming and going, this grey impermanent fact that we are, what is it that doesn't change? What is this mind? Bodhidharma says, bring it to me and I will put it to rest for you. Master Eka replied, this is much later, I have searched for the mind, but I've never been able to find it. You know, I have searched. This could be, you know, a few days later, a week later, 40 years later, 100 lifetimes later. I have searched. I have exhaustively searched. Everyone is in that place. Have you exhaustively searched? Or do you need to? And I have not been able to find it. This elusive self. this elusive mind. You know, again, we have that relentless urge to need to know. We want to know. We've got to know. We want to understand it. If I understand it, then I'll feel safe. I got something. Then I can cling to a rock in the river and not go over the falls, because now I've got a rock in the river. You know, I want to know. I've got to know what this is. What can you say, really, about what this is? I am surprised every day, that this experience is this experience. What is mundane or ordinary about this? But we're so good at making it mundane or ordinary. It's another day, another Sunday. Oh, Christ, it's snowing again. Or whatever it is. This is why it is, again, essential to learn, to discover, to illumine that place that can not be always on the wheel of conditioned thought. Always running it through the filter, always judging. Always subject to circumstances and the likes and the dislikes. But as Master Dogen said, it takes the backward step that turns the light inward and illumines self. The backward step, not the forward step, not the looking out, but rather the backward step. Take that backward step. Do it now. It makes no sense to take the backward step. But when you take the backward step, you understand. You take the backward step, turn the light inward, the action of enlightenment, and illumine self. Not this, you don't fall for, illumine the self of me, my life thus far, my name, my relationships, my career prospects, how much money I've got, etc., etc., etc. Because that's the window dressing that gets left behind. It is relatively important, but it is not absolutely important. What is absolutely important? Realize that. Master Eckhart, in his practice, searches exhaustively and says, with confidence, with truth, I have searched for it, I have never been able to find it. Not from a lack of looking. You know, each person, each one of us has that process, whatever that unique process is in our experience. Until the search is exhausted and you find where you are, beyond all doubt, I have never been able to find it. Find what? It is absurd. We tend to be suspicious of not knowing. How many, you know, you ask a question, if you say, I don't know, that's not, in our culture, in our society, it's usually not a very acceptable answer. To, you know, we like to hold on to some knowledge or be somewhat of an expert on most things. You know, you just hear people talk. Yet this not knowing, when you discover or you realize knowledge is a part of things, there is knowledge about things, okay, great, there's that. But you see the edges of it and you realize the limitation. That this life, this self that we are, knowledge only goes so far. I have never been able to find it, he says. And Bodhidharma says, good. Well, I've finished putting it to rest for you. Not without a trace of humor. A good teacher. What is exchanged there? What is transmitted? You know, but from this point, Master Eckhart is independent. no longer having to trek into the mountains or to seek out a master or not. He doesn't need to do that now because he has searched exhaustively. And through exhausting that search, has found where he is. And there is no longer the same dissatisfaction. To realize that circumstances and the comings and goings, well, they don't satisfy. That is not where satisfaction is not found in things, the great truth of Buddhism, the heart of the lineage. You know, whatever you can accumulate in the world of form is always subject to decay. The only thing that can really be relied upon is what? I have finished putting it to rest for you. I think Master Eckhart actually returned to the city. Lived in a city in China. And I was eventually poisoned by a jealous rival. Died. You know, circumstances. Who knows what is going to happen? You know, Master Bodhidharma, mythically it said they found in his tomb there was only one shoe, and then years later, one sandal. Somebody encountered him trekking across the Himalayas with one sandal. And then there's another version that says, historical version that says, he was likely killed and executed in a purge of intellectuals and spiritual teachers. I know which one I find more. More likely. Yeah. The point is not how it works out on the level of circumstances, but how we live now, what the quality of this life is, the quality of our life now. And whatever, you know, wherever we find ourselves, if we're disturbed by circumstances or content, then that veil is very thin that penetrates and goes right through that. That can put that aside. They can see the rise and fall of things. And not to be confused there. But as surely as the trees are growing, the sky is up there, the carpet is down here, and everything else throughout space and time, including this one, is as it is, in exactly the right place, at exactly the right time, in exactly the way it is. How can we find fault there? How futile to find fault there, then? The broken, toothed old barbarian came thousands of miles across the sea with an active spirit. Well, you needed an active spirit to make the journey. On that level. But that active spirit of inquiry, that active spirit of presence, not sitting in a cave in that sense. You may sit in a cave, but not sitting in a nest. But always active. What is this? Now, inquiring, looking, living. He raised waves where there was no wind. The whole scheme of Buddhism, Zen, of teaching. What for? Where's the problem, really? What's the problem? Well, Master Rinzai said, words like Buddha and Dharma are hitching posts for donkeys. To get caught up on that, you know? To think we're doing something called Buddhism. Or to be hindered by that, some idea of practice, of spiritual life. This is for spiritual life. But we raise waves. The fools do not even know four characters. Yeah, there's a lot of irony often, particularly Mumon's, these commentaries by Mumon. He calls them fools, but it's in an affectionate way. We don't need to know four characters. They've inherited the whole world. Coming from the West, pointing directly, the spirit of Zen, to point directly, to put each person in that position, not having to follow some way, but always being pointed back at the way.